Hello, everybody in podcast land. We at the Kennel Confidential always try to bring you quality guests and provide quality sound with our mics and the equipment that we use. We were having a little bit of technical difficulty with this one this week. We were getting a little feedback and the mic couldn't get it figured out, but we were anxious enough just to cover what Mr. Bill does and the dogs he uses that we decided just to roll on with what we got. So bear with us if you do hear the feedback coming through the microphone, and we will try to get that figured out for next time. Anyway, let's get on with the show. I hope you enjoy. You're listening to the Kennel Confidential Podcast, brought to you by the United Tree and Feist Association. I'm your host, Davin Ramage.
I'm your co-host, Chad Wagner.
Let's get into the episode. Back again for episode number 16 of the Kennel Confidential Podcast. And Chad and I are on the phone with Mr. Bill. And this is kind of a recent working dog that I've come across, but the category of working dog's been around for a long time. I just recently discovered coyote catch dogs and can't stay off the internet watching them. So I found Bill under the Instagram handle K9 Power and puts out some pretty cool greyhound coyote catching content, runs a little decoy dog. So we are going to pick Bill's brain and just figure out what he can tell us. Roll call, Chad, Bill.
Yes, sir.
I'm here.
All right, Bill. Mr. Bill, was that like a movie or like a Western, maybe? I don't know. I feel like that's coming to me. I'm going to call you Mr. Bill.
Are you thinking of Mr. Ed?
No, that was a horse. I know it wasn't Mr. Ed. I know who Mr. Ed is. Well, anyway, Mr. Bill, not the horse Ed. Give us a little background on yourself. You know, I always try to get people to kind of give us the meat and potatoes on what makes them tick. Really away from the dogs. We're going to spend an hour at least here probably talking about dogs. So outside of the dogs, just kind of your background, what you do, and maybe it's what led you to dogs.
Okay. Yeah. I grew up, my dad was a veterinarian for 40-something years. So I was always around dogs, and I was around a lot of dogs. Got to see the good and the bad on both sides, owners and dogs. Then we had horses and everything else growing up. And then I left home pretty young, went to some boarding schools and stuff, kind of got separated from some of that. I was in the Army, went over to Afghanistan 2005, came back, and just figured out that I didn't really have a place in society at the time. So I went into cowboying full-time. And for people that don't know what cowboying in the Western states looks like, it's kind of like Yellowstone, because everybody seems to know what that is now, but it's not quite as dramatic, you know.
So you're saying Hollywood fluffs it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. We don't have, like, a train station. I mean, it'd be handy if we did, but we don't. But no, you know, just cowboy stuff, riding every day, branding, you know, all of the cool cowboy stuff. And I primarily got into border collies, Idaho shags for a while there. A little bit of a distinction there. They can look a little bit the same. Shags tend to be kind of like a hammer, where border collies are more like a sword. They're just more of a finesse type of tool. And got into a pack of collie dogs and had them for a long time. And I finally got to a point where I'd always been interested in hunting with dogs. Dogs were just a fascination of mine. I just absolutely loved working with dogs. Almost every ranch job that I ever had, if I couldn't have dogs, I wouldn't go. And that was kind of a rule of mine, was if I couldn't run dogs, I didn't go. So then I got into some hunting dogs, and I just kind of never looked back. And that's where I've kind of where we went.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
High school and junior high, and we went to New Mexico and ended up meeting this guy that he kept a piece of baling wire underneath his hat band. And when the wind got to blowing, you'd see him, he'd get up there and he'd just crank this thing down. And at the end of the day, he'd take his hat off and he'd have this ring all around his head. And it almost looked like he'd been wearing a girdle on his head. So I said all that to say that if you have practiced this, we will overlook your brain damage.
I don't think I got any any serious brain damage, but I did land on my head more than a few times. I used to always say that I landed on my head, so everything's all right. I'm good to go. So
your head broke.
It's whenever I land on other body parts that I get hurt.
You got a callous skull.
That's right. That is right. Absolutely.
So you've kind of always been around dogs with your dad being a veterinarian and that sort of thing. When would you say that you really got your start in your own working dogs, your kennel, your dogs? How long have you been doing that?
I got back from Afghanistan in about 2006, and I had two or three collies that first year. I grew up with dogs, always running around with dogs, but really kind of my own deal and my own direction with dogs. I was about 21 years old, so 2006, okay. Give or take.
So when did you transition, and you might have said it a second ago, maybe I missed it in my notes here, but when did you transition over to greyhounds?
Ooh, that'd be a hard one. That would be probably 7-8 years ago.
Okay.
6 or 7 years ago, give or take.
So you've caught lots of dogs in that time.
Yeah, I have. I had more border collies, certainly, to begin with. Border collies, part of the problem with any dog breed, and it was very apparent in border collies, was they got super popular. And whenever a dog breed gets popular, everybody breeds them, everybody has them, and they breed them for the look, you know, the black and white border collie. They don't necessarily breed them for what they actually do, for their function. So there's a lot of dogs to sift through to find some good ones. Greyhounds, hunting dogs in particular, for the most part, have kind of avoided that. And so there's a little bit less culling that goes on through hunting dogs in that regard. They just haven't gotten that popular. Purebred, hot blood, track bred greyhounds, a little bit different story. Certainly there was lots of those dogs around, and just because they were a hot blood greyhound didn't mean they were a hunting dog. And there is, well, I'm sure we'll get into it, but there is certainly a difference between a straight hot blood or straight greyhound and what we call an American staghound or a coyote hound.
So you use greyhounds for catch dogs. What about the decoy dogs? You use about the same?
So the greyhounds, it started out, technically, it's a totally separate sport. So I run greyhounds, or we call them greyhounds. Guys in the industry or in this sport will call them greyhounds. They're technically, I believe, they're called an American staghound. So they've got some wolfhound in there and some other breeds in there, but as well as a fair bit of greyhound in them, or Saluki. So the greyhounds are the best coyote hounds out there, are catch and kill dogs. They'll do both. There's very few of them that will catch and kill on their own. It's generally a pack effort. But if you've got a good set of dogs, it's over pretty quickly, and there's not a lot of wasted effort there. Then the decoy dogs, I run staghounds, and I've got, right now, I've got one hide terrier decoy dog that I also run with my greyhounds during the winter. Just because she absolutely loves to chew on a coyote. And so she runs with my greyhounds. I turn my greyhounds out on a coyote. They catch the coyote. And whenever I get there, I turn that dog out as well. She obviously cannot make the race. She's a lot slower than the staghound. But she just loves to rag on a coyote. So, and I can't leave her at home, you know.
So do you start all your own pups, or do you already get them trained?
So when I started out, especially with staghounds, I don't want to offend anybody, but they were kind of somebody's culls. They were dogs that didn't work for those guys, or they were kind of they didn't fit their program anymore. So I started initially with a dog named Goldie. She came from a guy in Idaho. She was an older staghound, probably 9 years old. She was absolutely the perfect starter dog. She wasn't a very, she wasn't a super strong coyote dog. She was a really good pack dog. She would fight a coyote as long as there was somebody else there with her. But she would run hard. She could see really well. She was super honest. She didn't scream at shadows and stuff, you know. And I say scream, whenever they see a coyote from the box, they start squalling their heads off because they want to get after a coyote. And she wouldn't scream at deer. She wouldn't scream at cows. She wouldn't do any of that. She'd just wait until she saw a coyote or occasionally a jackrabbit. And if Goldie told you there was a coyote out there, she was honest, and you could trip it without seeing a coyote. So I kind of started with greyhounds that way. I've got a few pups over the years and run them on my own. And but yeah, when I got started, I was lucky. There was a couple of guys that had some dogs that just weren't quite in their program anymore. And they worked out really good as starter dogs for me. And they really, really taught me a lot. I was really lucky that way.
That was a post I came across that really got my attention about you, too, and I liked. It was on your Instagram page, Canine Power. I forget how you put it now. I should have looked it up. But, you know, people told you the dogs were too slow, and, you know, you decided just to kind of sink everything into those dogs and make a point. That really kind of drew me to your page more, and it kind of caused me to keep sitting there and surfing because, I mean, who doesn't like an underdog story anyway? I've even told Chad I've thought about going to the animal shelter and finding a dog that looks feisty, you know, something that looks like a squirrel dog, and just kind of doing a whole story on whether or not an animal shelter dog can make a tree dog. That poor shelter dog may need a better trainer than me, but anyway, that was one thing that kind of drew me to you, was that I didn't realize they were what you're calling somebody else's culls, but it did kind of draw me to your page that it was really kind of an underdog story with the pack that you had.
Yeah. Well, I didn't grow up with hunting dogs. As a matter of fact, my folks don't necessarily think it's the greatest thing ever. So, you know, it's there's something about dogs that don't necessarily work for other people, and I kind of enjoy some of those dogs. They've gotten maybe not the fairest shake in life, and I'm not saying that any of the dogs that I got were necessarily abused in any way or mistreated. They just didn't fit their program, and they weren't what those guys wanted. And luckily I was dumb enough, I didn't know any better. To me, they were just cool dogs. And, you know, so I learned a lot. And as I developed, I started kind of whittling down traits that I liked and things that I didn't. The other thing it really taught me was, since I didn't start out with a jam up nice set of dogs, was how to complement each other. So if I've got a good pack dog, if I can get a good throat dog, or a good head dog with that chest dog or that pack dog, then I can make it work. A lot of guys are lucky and they've got just some jam up nice head dogs, throat dogs, and they don't have to worry about trying to complement. They can throw any two dogs together, two or three dogs together, and I just couldn't do that. And so I just had to figure out how each dog fought a coyote and how each dog wanted to work, and put them together so they could complement each other and make a working team. So that was one thing I did learn in the Army, was not everybody comes to the Army from all over the country with a whole bunch of different abilities, and a good leader, which I'm not saying I'm a good leader, but good leaders certainly taught me some things. And part of that was how to take various backgrounds and put them together so that they can all work together and accomplish the same goal. So that was kind of a cool thing.
What's your method of training? I mean, what would that entail? Just hacking with other dogs?
So with the staghounds, it's pretty much in their DNA. They, if it runs, they'll chase it. And so therein lies the quandary of what's game and what's not game. Obviously, it's against the law in most states, especially the western states, to chase big game animals. So you can't chase antelope and you can't chase deer, and they run and they wait next to the road, especially antelope. Antelope are the bane of the coyote hunters, especially out west. Antelope think it's the greatest sport ever to run right to a pickup, flash that big white butt and turn around and peel out and leave, or follow the pickup. They love to do stuff like that. So greyhounds or staghounds naturally want to chase anything that runs. Or most of them do. Now, my method is, I don't get after a pup for showing hunt, for showing drive, until they start to figure out what the target species is. Once they figure out what the target species is, and that's one thing I learned with handling border collies and cattle dogs early on, was I'd see guys get a border collie puppy, and they would go out in the corral and they would herd their horses around. Well, they'd tune on this dog because you don't chase horses. Okay. So that puppy's, you know, 3 months old. Okay. Roger that. I'm chasing something. I'm trying to bite it. It's an animal. And I just got tuned on. Don't do that. Okay. Got it. So all of a sudden, when that dog's a year old and a guy's getting ready to go to work for him or with that dog, they can't understand why those dogs don't want to go to work. Well, when he was a puppy, you told him that biting things and chasing furred animals was a bad thing. And so I just crossed that over into my hunting dogs. And staghounds are very, very sensitive dogs. So you don't get away with – you don't get heavy-handed with a staghound. They'll just – they just don't take it. And border collies are a lot the same. So I let them scream their heads off at whatever they want. I don't worry about it when they're a young dog. And I turn them out with an older dog or a set of dogs. And for the most part, it's been my experience that a young dog on the first time or two out on a coyote, they're not going to do a lot. They're going to roam around and look at it and watch it. The really good pups will go in there and pull a little fur, you know. And then as they start to get a little older, they just naturally kind of find where they want to be. And a lot of that has to do with pack dynamic. And I've had a very good lesson in that earlier this year. I had a young staghound that I raised that was really, really fast, saw really good, had a really high prey drive. But for some reason, when I was putting her out on a coyote, she'd catch a coyote and she'd get to a coyote and she wouldn't fight. When everybody got there, she'd just quit. And I couldn't quite figure out what to think of it. And I have a big male that I call Buddy. And he's 106 pounds. And he's not aggressive on other dogs. I did get him because he was a dog fighter. But I've that's another story, but I've kind of gotten through that with him. And I've never really had a dog fight with him. And I got to watching, and that young staghound, it was primarily when Buddy got there, she would just step out. And that was kind of a social hierarchy. That was his. And she wasn't going to get in there. So I started leaving Buddy in the box, and I ran her with a different set of dogs, and it was just a whole different – she was just a whole different animal. She went right to work and right to chewing on a coyote. And that was just something that, you know, watching these dogs, I figured out who works best together and how they work best together. But back to your question of how to start dogs, generally it really, really helps to have a solid jam-up dog, because you don't want a pup – get bit if you can help it. And so having a good solid older head dog that'll pin the throat or pin the head and let a pup pull on some fur and start chewing on a coyote really goes a long ways towards developing a good strong dog.
Now, these dogs naturally they figure out, I know you said chest, neck, head, do these dogs just kind of naturally fall into one of those positions, or is it trained? Is it just observed by other dogs? Is that how they figure out if they want to be on the head or neck or in the chest area?
Well, yeah, certainly a large majority of it is just kind of predisposition of where they want to be. And part of it can be learned, you know, and with training on these dogs, there is one or two things that we do as far as training these dogs. If you've got some dogs that are starting to get to the back of a coyote, it's common practice to go back there. And, you know, what I like to do is either grab a coyote, and generally I've got an older dog that's got the head and that coyote's dead. So it's not like we're jerking around a live coyote. But you get back there and you get a coyote by the tail or by the back legs, and they kind of naturally don't want to bite next to your hands or in your zone. So it naturally moves those dogs forward on the coyote and gets them. If you just kind of put your presence towards the back of a coyote, you know, whether it's your foot or your leg or something, it kind of forces the dogs to the front. I've seen people kind of push on the dogs a little hard and then it blows a pup totally off the coyote. But it's been my experience that if I can just kind of gently herd, I guess you'd call it, a dog more towards the front, they tend to gravitate that way. The other thing that has a lot to do with it is, a coyote can double back on themselves and bite anything that bites them in the middle. And generally speaking, if a dog is, especially by themselves, or they're the first ones there. If they grab a coyote by the middle, they're going to get bit on the side of the head. It's going to happen. That coyote's going to turn around. He's going to bite him right on the side of the head. So it doesn't take them very long to figure out where the pointy end is. Get on the sharp end, get the sharp end neutralized, and the threat goes away. Once you get a coyote's head pinned down, they don't have claws or anything, so they're pretty harmless. So a smart dog figures out, if I bit this coyote in the middle or I bite him in the back end and he turns around and bites me on the side of the head, maybe I ought to go the other direction.
Now this next question is really intrigues me. I've hunted rabbit dogs, and now I'm hunting tree and fox. Of course, the beagles were on rabbits. We want our dogs to locate the game and stay with the game. On these decoy dogs, they locate the game and then run away from it and bring it back to you. I guess that just escapes me how in the world you do that. What would the training look like on those dogs?
So I got Bonnie. She was a high terrier. Bonnie's first instinct was to chase a coyote off into the sunset. She could never catch a coyote. You know, I mean, she's a 48-pound terrier, and she's built like a cinder block, and there's no way she's going to catch a coyote. But part of the big thing is having a solid recall, and I use Garmin collars, and I use a tone as a recall. And so she'd run out to a coyote, and if she could catch a coyote, she would. She would absolutely love to catch a coyote. She just can't. But she's smart enough, and she's learned. As a pup, there was a couple of – it was just a learning curve. And ironically, the very first time I took Bonnie out and had a coyote come in on a decoy stand, I had 7 coyotes come in. 7 coyotes on a year-old terrier pup will scare you to death and just start getting worried. Coyotes are kind of generally out west. They're mostly cowards by themselves. When they get 2 or 3 of them together, they get pretty brave. When they get 7 of them together, they're the Avengers. I mean, they will absolutely take a dog if they can. So it worked out. Bonnie went out there, and there was 7 coyotes, and they were nipping and getting after her, and I toned her back, and she came running right back to me, and I shot some coyotes, and she went out and ragged on some coyotes, and from that day forward, she was absolutely game on.
So she more or less just figured out, hey, if I get close to the gun, he's got my back.
Oh, yes, and it's amazing to watch her now, because she'll run out to a coyote, and she'll work with a coyote, and she comes back, and, I mean, you can kind of get that look of, dude, are you going to shoot this coyote or what, man? You know, sometimes it's fun. I like watching coyotes sit there and scream at us and stuff. I mean, it's super cool to have a coyote right in your lap. I mean, just screaming their head off at you. But that dog is looking at you. You can see her out of the corner of your eye. She's sitting there like, come on, man. Let's kill this sucker. I want to chew on him.
Danger close.
And, oh, yeah. But she's super cool that way. And I was really lucky that I ended up with that caliber of a dog. And, you know, every situation is a little bit different. In the wintertime, coyotes they don't want a decoy. They'll just flat run from a dog and leave the country. You'll never see them again. So I've got her to where she won't go out to a coyote until I tell her to go out to a coyote. She waits around. And that works out really, really good for me, because I can get some coyotes that in the wintertime a dog would run off. They'll come in. But coincidentally, since I've started packing the dog on coyote stands, and I've coyote hunted for years, but I started decoying, like we talked about, I don't know how many years ago. And since I've started packing a dog on a stand, I've never had a coyote that I hit that got away. As a matter of fact, with Bonnie, I had a coyote a few years ago that snuck in on me. He was 50 yards away. He kind of came in behind me, behind me. And I flipped around and I made a shot, and I run a suppressor, and it's pretty obvious whenever you hit. It sounds like somebody dropped a pumpkin. I mean, that's what it sounds like. And I heard it, and I thought, man, I hit that coyote. But he turned around and he ran out of there like a scalded cat. And Bonnie took off after him. And I thought, well, the way he ran, there's no way I didn't hit him. I was shooting a 243. That coyote should have just bang, flop, you know. But anyways, a few minutes later, my caller beeped at me and said my dog was treed 500 yards away. And Monty had him stopped down in a pond 500 yards away. And that was a coyote, and there's been more than one case where that was a coyote that would have got away wounded and maybe lived, probably would have died. But dang sure would have gotten away wounded if it hadn't been for having a dog on the stand. So that's been a huge benefit for me. It's peace of mind. If I hit a coyote, I'm going to recover it.
I guess the closest I've ever come is I was out squirrel hunting one day and had my old dog out. We was in a cedar thicket, and I just happened to look over, and he was coming back up towards me just checking in and just kind of at a leisurely trot, I guess. Something caught my eye, and I don't know, about 10 yards behind him there's this coyote just following him like, hey, I'm coming with you.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't acting aggressive. It was just trotting behind him. And yep. Got close enough, I killed it with a 22.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say my guess is you must have been, I would assume you were in the springtime. Would that be fair, or were you in the fall?
I was in the fall.
Okay. So was it a pup or was it an adult?
He was almost 2 years old.
Okay. Well, I mean, you start getting into denning areas, and there's a lot of really good den or decoying. And so decoying with coyotes is in the spring, you can certainly have some luck. And there are guys out there right now just absolutely smashing it because coyotes are starting to pair up and they're starting to breed, and they get really protective of their territory. They're starting to get ready to den, and they'll get pretty protective. In the summer, when they're on dens, they can also decoy really, really well because they've got a den. But you've got to be fairly close to a den site, has been my experience, for them to get really aggressive. Now, in the fall, it's super cool. You've got a lot of pups getting ready for dispersal. The pups are starting to get out and around. The adults are still in the area. They're like a long-range babysitter, has been my experience. They'll run around with the pups kind of in a pack for a while. But in the western states, generally, the pups start to disperse late into the fall. But the adults are still, like I say, a long-range babysitter. So if you start doing some pup distress, I mean everybody that can hear it comes running because they think you've got one of the pups. And all the pups come, the adults come, they all come for war because they think somebody caught into their area and has one of those yearling pups or young of the year pups. And they are ready for war. And in my opinion, the fall is the best decoying you can ask for. It is phenomenal. You get lots of coyotes coming in, and they come in hard and fast and mean and mad. So that, to me, the fall is super cool. I look forward to the fall every year.
Yeah, I had a similar scenario. I was out squirrel hunting, and I was close to the truck, which really kind of, I mean, I was out on 170,000 acres of public land, but I don't know. I had garbage in my truck. It was just really weird to me that close to the truck and the road that brought me in that the coyote was that curious. But I had a dog. He was probably a year at this time, you know, so he was a pup himself and didn't know what a coyote was, fortunately. And so this dog comes in, and I'm, all, like I said, almost to the truck. And I see the coyote before the coyote had a clue I was there. I don't know if the coyote ever knew I was there. But my dog saw him, and I saw his attention towards the coyote. And I thought, oh, crap. And he wasn't aggressive at all. But the coyote was, I guess, more so afraid of him. And kind of, it didn't really run out of there fast, but my dog went after him. And my brain went straight to panic. Like, this little 15, maybe 17-pound dog is not going to handle this coyote, you know, and the coyote's going to handle him. So he took off running, and I just, I guess, blindly out of panic, I grabbed my handheld, and I start hitting him. You know, I'm bumping him with a shock tone or a shock correction to get him off the coyote, and he starts yelping. And I start running, and I'm not even thinking about it. I'm hitting the shock, you know. And I start running thinking this coyote's on top of my dog, and then my brain kicks it back into, I guess, processing mode, and I realize I'm holding down the continuous shock, and I'm like, holy crap, he's yelping because I'm burning him up. But because when I got in there, that coyote was gone, but I thought for sure I was going to find a coyote on top of my dog. So that's yeah, only coyote, that's only experience I've ever had squirrel hunting, though.
Yeah, and you probably did yourself a favor, I would guess. I'm not an expert on squirrel dogs, but I know that guys that run hounds, you know, lion hounds and bear hounds and stuff, they don't want their dogs chasing after coyotes or deer or anything like that. And I would imagine that that probably taught that dog. I guarantee you he never – he smelled a coyote and he's like, ah, yeah, nope, I'm not going to do that.
He went complete other direction. Yeah, that could have been.
Probably saved him. But, you know, I think there's – coyotes are certainly over – they're given a lot of credit. And don't get me wrong, coyotes in urban areas that prey on dogs are trained to come in and fight and kill dogs. And they – certainly smaller dogs, they absolutely do it all the time. But generally, it's been my experience that if you have even a small dog that's confident and aggressive, one coyote, unless you're right on top of a den, one coyote's like, dude, that looks like a little tiny bag of dynamite, and I don't really want any of that. And so I see a lot of videos on the internet of hikers and stuff, and they've got a dog, and they got a coyote that's kind of following them around, and you know, people start to panic over that. And I wouldn't say that you should be totally unconcerned, but it's not something that would stop my heart. Maybe it's because I've been around hunting dogs and been decoying coyotes long enough, but coyotes, generally speaking, if they're in wild areas, they might follow you around. They're curious. There's another canine. But to just come in and absolutely grab a dog would be, I would say, out of the ordinary. Now, there's probably going to be a lot of backlash over that, and a lot of guys are going to tell me I'm wrong, but that's been my experience.
Well, we're no strangers to backlash. That's all right. We can take it.
Yeah, so.
What are you looking at when you're picking a pup? You know, you get ready to start training another dog, you go to a breeder, and you're looking for a pup. What are some of the traits you're looking for?
Are we talking decoy dogs or coyote hounds?
Both.
Well, both. One, do one, and then do the other if you can.
Well, greyhounds or coyote hounds, and there is a distinction. When I say coyote hounds, that can confuse some people, because there is sight hounds and then there's trail hounds. Back east and down south, they have guys that have trail hounds, and it's just like the old school fox hunts, except on coyotes. So, but what I run are sight hounds, and we call them coyote hounds. When I'm looking for a coyote hound, it's kind of a crapshoot. You don't know a whole lot. They're greyhound type dogs are generally a lot more timid. They're just not, you know, if you don't know anything about staghounds and you look at them, you're going to think, man, all these pups are timid. And some of them are just downright outgoing, and that can be fairly normal. But for the most part, it's been my experience that young coyote hounds are pretty timid. They're just a timid type of dog. What I like to see at a young age is a dog that has no interest in fighting or aggression with other dogs. They absolutely have got to work as a pack. And a fighter, especially with a staghound, because they're so big and the capacity for harm is so great, any sign of aggression towards another dog is, in my opinion, an instant cull. You can't have that. You're running these dogs in a box, adrenaline run high. You don't need a dog that's going to get excited and turn around and attack another dog. So dog aggression is immediate cull for me. The other thing that I like to see, and we go out and chase rabbits and do things like that, but I want a dog that whenever they're puppies, they want to chase mice. They look at birds. They show that they've got a little bit of prey drive. And that to me is big. The other thing is feet and legs. I kind of like a dog that's a little bit more cat-footed, that's got straight legs. Form follows function in greyhounds has been my experience. If they're not built right, they're just not going to be able to keep up. Not going to say that they wouldn't have everything else that's right, but if you're, you know, it's like trying to run a race car with a spare tire on there. Just not, I mean, you're still going to be fast, but you're just not going to be in the race. And so that's kind of a big thing, is looking at dog aggression for one. And they've pretty well bred that out. There's not a lot of dog aggression in staghounds. But occasionally, as I said, it does come in, and I got one because of dog aggression. And I've had a few small instances with him, but I run primarily females because his only episodes were with males. And I haven't had much more than normal disciplinary pack. I would call it pack discipline from him. So he's got a place here until he decides he doesn't want to play ball anymore. But right now he gets along. I run him with, I've got that male kenneled with two female staghounds and that female Bonnie, that decoy, that hide terrier of mine. And by and large, it's a peaceful kennel. He gets along really well.
Well, and one thing you keep mentioning your pack, and I guess that's one thing we haven't really had you expand on yet. But and you and I talked about a little bit, you know, a week or so ago off the mic. How big is your pack? How many dogs do you run? What would you consider normal when you're talking about running, you know, one male with these females?
Yeah, so right now I'm running. I've got Buddy, which is a 106 pound male staghound. I've got Dixie, which is about a 90-pound female staghound. I've got Crazy Katie. She's she's in the 80-pound range. And I had Trixie. You and I talked about it a couple weeks ago on the phone. Trixie was that young staghound that I keep alluding to that I raised. She had a little bit more Saluki in her, and she was 50-something pounds, but wicked fast. But we turned out on a coyote, and she had a catastrophic accident that was I don't know the best way to say it, but she died from a bad accident. She was running at 35 miles an hour going after a coyote in rough country, and she had an accident, and it was fatal. So it's not without its risks. But so I run those three staghounds right now. Generally, I like to run four. That's primarily budget-based, because if I could, I would have a lot more. So it's just I got to pay to feed them. And then I run Bonnie as a hide terrier. She's a primarily decoy dog. I finally got a litter of pups out of Bonnie. And so right now I've got three female pups and two male pups out of her. She was bred to a Jag or a Yak Terrier, German Hunt Terrier. So these pups are going to be, you know, in the 30 to 40-pound range probably. And that's primarily the next generation of decoy slash coon hunting dogs. And that's another thing that I do quite a bit with Bonnie is hunt coons and brush piles and feed yards and stuff like that. But so that's – and then there's a short dog that also has a residency in my house. He was a cull. The guy had him as a pet and didn't want him. And so I got this little short beastie dog. He's kind of a southern bred. I think he was supposed to be kind of a rabbit dog. He kind of has a running, you know, when he gets after rabbits. But he's honest. You can put him in a brush pile. And if there's a coon in that brush pile, he'll let you know. If there's not, he'll turn around and leave. So he's getting a little older, and he doesn't get into the brush pile as much anymore. So. That's what I run.
So what about the decoy dogs? What do you look for in a pup on those?
On a decoy dog, I want a dog that's absolutely confident. And I don't mind puppy behavior. There's a difference between... So, for instance, I had a kind of a test that I did on these puppies. I've got them in a kennel that they were raised in, and they're comfortable in the kennel. Nothing's new. And I go in there with a glove, and I bang on the side of the kennel. Well, it startles them. They're puppies. They don't know, you know, wow, that's a loud noise. So they all kind of jump and run, and they all turn around and they look back and they want to see what that was. If you have one that, in my opinion, one that is still trying to hide, that's not really a trait that I want. I don't want a dog that gets startled and then tries to hide. They should be fairly bold. I mean, they're going to have to go out there and face a coyote on the coyote's home ground. So having a dog that's bold is very important to me, but reserved. I don't want an off the wall crazy. That's been, you know, kind of my experience. I want a dog that I can control and I can handle. Certainly with decoying, the physical aspects are a little bit different, but I would like to have a strong head that can get a hold of a coyote and maintain one if it's wounded. You know, there's guys decoying with all kinds of dogs, everything from Australian Shepherds to Jags, which are, you know, 16 to 20 some pound little terriers. You know, so guys are decoy and blackmouth curs. There's several well-known guys decoying with blackmouth curs. So they're great big dogs. It's been my experience, and I'm sure I know those guys will disagree with me, but it's my experience that a big dog tends to intimidate a coyote, especially if you're kind of on the edges of the decoying season. And especially if you're dealing with a younger coyote pup, like a young of the year, when you see I feel like if you've got a coyote pup that was born in the spring and you're out there in October, November, and he comes over the hill and a 90 pound blackmouth cur runs out there, or an 80 pound or a 70 pound blackmouth cur runs out there, I mean, you gotta be psycho to be like, dude, let's do this. It's, you know, the big dogs, I feel like, intimidate more coyotes than I want. So I try to get a dog that's about the same size as a coyote. I do hunt with other people. I like taking some kids out that have never been out hunting. So it's an added bonus that these dogs are black and tan. They don't look anything like a coyote. I have two rules whenever I take people out hunting with me. Don't shoot my dog and don't shoot me. Rule number one is don't shoot my dog. So, and I always make sure my dogs are in a safe zone before I release somebody to go ahead and shoot. But I just like having dogs that are very obviously not a coyote. I just have a little more peace of mind that way.
Well, it sounds like you're looking for a more intelligent dog.
Yes, I guess there are certainly some more straight brute force dogs. And unfortunately, some of these dogs have gotten some bad raps over the years, pit bulls being one of them. For me, a pit bull ticks a lot of boxes, but they don't quite have the thought process that I want. They're not going to come back. They certainly have the strength. They certainly have, you know, well-bred dogs have the stamina. And they, you know, they've got no shortage of drive, but they just don't have the recall that I'm looking for, and they aren't watching the situation. So yeah, I want a dog that can think. The other thing is I have to handle these dogs on a daily basis. They're certainly hunting dogs first, but, and I use this cautiously, they're friends as well. They're partners. I want to enjoy being around these dogs. And that's one big thing about me with my greyhounds. There's some guys that they're hunting dogs. They're not, and the same goes for other breeds of hounds and so forth. They're hunting dogs. They're not pets. And my dogs aren't pets. But people are generally kind of shocked at how amenable and manageable my staghounds are and my terriers are, because I handle them. I want them to be a dog that I enjoy being around. They're not a rifle that I take out of the gun case and go hunting. They're my dogs. They're my buddies. I mean, they're still hunting dogs, and they have to be a hunting dog first, but they also need to be something that I can have in a pack dynamic and also enjoy being around.
So what's some of the necessary equipment? I know you mentioned Garmin track and train.
Yes.
What's some of the other equipment you use?
So I use, like we said, a Garmin track and train. Primarily so I know where my dogs are, also in case we have a misunderstanding with a deer or something like that. I've got varying levels of control there. I like hunting with a suppressed rifle. I find that it's a little easier on dogs, certainly easier on me. A really good first aid kit to me is paramount. I've got to have a very good first aid kit. It's not common that decoy dogs get anything serious, but I don't want to be in a situation where I have a dog hurt and there's nothing I can do about it. Most things with a decoy dog can be sorted out, and I go through four or five tubes of triple antibiotic, and I would say that's a big thing, is triple antibiotic. Most bites from coyotes and coons can be doctored fairly well. Flush it out with a little bit of water, tap it dry, what you can, and shove some triple antibiotic in it, and 99% of the time it's been my experience that you're fine. Dogs are very resilient. So a good first aid kit is big, a good collar. You know, a guy should always carry a leash. You never know who you're going to run into, especially if you're out on public land. Your dog may be under control and your dog may be good, but somebody else's dog may not. And a decoy dog, in my experience, my decoy dogs, they're not going to start any fights, but they're not going to back down from one. And if a strange dog were to run up to one of my dogs out on public land, my dog won't start a fight. But my dog has also been in a fair amount of scraps with coyotes and knows how to handle herself. And I would hate for somebody's pet to get, you know, come in with a bad attitude and have a misunderstanding. So a leash for me is another one of those pieces of equipment that I generally try to go everywhere with.
Well, the most expensive piece of equipment that y'all have to take to the field that we tree dogs don't have to, or tree hunters don't have to take to the field, is your rig. And those things, I have as much fun looking at those as I do watching your videos. Those rigs, the trucks are, I mean, they're pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, the sky's the limit. There's some guys out in Idaho that are running some long travel four-link stuff that is, I mean, it's a pre-runner type pickup, and, I mean, they can flat get to it. There's a lot of guys running around with, you know, 90s and 80s and even 70s pickups, which is probably a smart thing to do because coyote hunting out of a pickup is notoriously hard on a pickup. It's not if you stack a pickup up, it's when. But a good pickup that has four-wheel drive, and then the Greyhound boxes, which I think is what you're alluding to there, is probably the key piece of equipment. So we've got boxes that have doors that only come up, you know, within 6 to 8 inches of the top, so the dogs can put their heads out of the box and they can see as you're driving. They can see looking for coyotes. And on that door, there's a latch, and guys have different ways they do it. I have push-pull cables, similar to like a throttle cable on a tractor, that are ran into the cab of the pickup. And whenever the dogs see a coyote, I can pull that lever, and it'll trip the latch and dump the dog. And we call it dump the dogs, but the door falls down and kind of makes a ramp, and the dogs go out and get after the coyote. Other guys they've ran it with cables, just a straight cable or a rope. Whenever I first started, I built a box and I put it in the back of a Polaris Ranger, and I just had a little rope hanging down in the cab and pull on that. Matter of fact, the very first coyotes I ever caught were, I was horseback. I had no shortage of horses. I didn't have a pickup or a box, but I had horses, and that's how they used to do it. So I figured I could do it. So that was how I got my start, was riding around horseback and I made some really good dogs that way. It really taught those dogs not to chase deer, not to chase antelope, because there's nothing you can do. You're on the ground, you know, you've really got to have a handle on them at that point. In a pickup and in a box, it's a little bit different. You can obviously drive away from them, but when you're horseback and you come over the hill and there's 35 antelope out there, it's nothing but you and God's green earth out there between those antelope. You've really got to have a handle on those dogs, or you have a big wreck, or you can.
Well, and those cables that run into the cab, you can control different boxes and dump different dogs at certain times. Like when you pull the cable, you're not dumping all the dogs, right? You could have four different cables in there.
Yes. So there's four so some guys run we call them 2-hole boxes. So you can run 2 sets of dogs. Some guys run 4-hole boxes, which is what I've got, but I only use 2 of them for greyhounds. The other two, one is kind of a catch-all storage water stuff. The other one I run terriers in. Some guys even have 6-hole boxes. Whenever you pull a cable, you dump what we call a set of dogs. You're putting that set of dogs on the ground, and that's all. There's varying ways to hunt. Some guys will only run 1 set of dogs. Some guys will run 2 sets of dogs on a coyote. It all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. There's different things. If you're in an area where coyotes are a problem, dump as many sets of dogs as you have to catch the coyote. Your goal is to catch coyotes. For me, my goal is to watch my dogs run. catching the coyote is secondary. I love watching these dogs hunt. I love watching them run. So if I, and we talked about this on the phone a few weeks ago, if I get a coyote and I dump a set of dogs and it's a good race, hey, that's all I care about. I'm not going to run around and try to get ahead of that coyote and dump dogs and catch that coyote at all costs. You know, that is secondary to me. For me, it's watching the dogs run and watching the dogs hunt. So there's different ways and there's different, you know, different reasons why guys are doing things. But for me, it's about the race.
I guess wide open country is probably what you're looking for as far as your sight hounds, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that helps. There's places in Nebraska in the sand hills where, if people aren't familiar with the sand hills, they need to get on Google and look at it, because it's an unreal piece of planet. And, you know, it's like somebody just wadded up the earth, kind of. It's not big hills, but they're little hills. And those coyotes in that part of the world, a sighthound doesn't keep track of one, doesn't see one all the time. Those coyotes go over a hill, and it might be a few seconds until that coyote hound gets over the hill. And so they've got to be able to either do a little bit of winding on one, which is what that Trixie dog was phenomenal at, or they've got to be able to scan and kind of, you know, with their eyes and pick that coyote back up because they've lost sight of them. And so there's a difference between sand hills coyote hounds and some of the rest of them. Some other guys are really lucky that, you know, like some of these guys down in Kansas and parts of Texas, they might watch that dog run straight away for a mile. And I mean, they don't break contact. In the sand hills, those dogs are a whole different ball of wax. They've got to be able to have a little something extra to follow a coyote in that broken country. And certainly there's guys in Kansas doing that as well. And parts of Oklahoma, the Flint Hills of Kansas. I've never been there, but that's the way I understand it. It's pretty broken up, and so those guys also have to have dogs that can not – they've got to have some sense. They're not just following a rabbit around a track. They've got to be able to really look.
It seems like it'd be tough here, the country we live in, to run sighthounds. We've got hills. Everything's wooded up. Line of sight wouldn't be very far.
No, and I know there are some guys in your part of the world, and they know a lot more about it than me, that are running in that country, and I would imagine that it's very challenging, and that's one reason why I think some of those guys back east tend to do a little bit more party hunting, because they can kind of herd a coyote out onto a field where, if it was just one guy and they jumped a coyote, he's going to beat it to the timber and you're done, or break, or, you know, whatever kind of country you guys have got. So, you know, that may be, there's different styles. There's guys that party hunt, so there's more than one pickup with dogs, or there's more than one pickup just kind of running the country, trying to kind of herd coyotes in a general direction or get coyotes to come up off the ground. So there's different ways to do it, but yeah, I don't envy guys that are back east that have chopped up stuff like that. That'd be awful hard.
So are you pretty well received from private landowners about letting you come hunt, or do you kind of rely on public land, or what do you normally try to do?
So the problem with a lot of public land, first of all, Nebraska doesn't have a lot. Wyoming has a fair bit. Montana has a fair bit. But most of the public land doesn't allow driving on it. That was also why I was horseback hunting, was because it gave me access to a lot of land that I couldn't drive on. The problem that you run into with private land is a lot of guys don't want people driving around their pastures. Now, if you get down into some farm ground, some of those guys don't care in the winter. You know, it's frozen ground. You're really not going to hurt anything in the winter with an F-150. There's kind of a stigma that has been attached to some coyote hound guys over the years in various states. You know, the the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and there's been some guys that have trespassed, have, you know, not had permission, cut fences, drove through fences. You know, every sport has its bad eggs, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of coyote hound guys left. So when one guy does something bad, it's like the next three generations of farmers remember, you know, well, grandpa said no coyote hounds because them damn coyote hound guys drive through fences and stuff. And I run into that. You know, guys, not only no, hell no. And all right. Appreciate it. Thank you. And move on. But some guys just, they want coyotes thinned out, and it's all right with them how you do it. Decoying with coyotes, obviously that's a lot different game. You can park and you walk in and you set up like a traditional coyote stand, and that there more people are receptive to that for sure.
See, I would have thought in our country especially, it seems like coyotes just have a terrible stigma anyway, but it just seems like to me if you knocked on a door and asked a landowner that, you know, had a grandkid or a son, or maybe the landowner himself or herself was out there whitetail hunting or turkey hunting or you name it, that they would be, you know, begging coyote hunters to come out and kill them.
This is true to a degree. I have said for years, I love coyote hunting. I hate coyote hunters. And I hate that I have to say that, but there's been a lot of guys that have made it, have kind of ruined it for a lot of people. Guys will deal with the coyotes, and quite honestly, out west here, there are instances of depredation from coyotes, but it's not every single day. You know, generally speaking, it's been my experience with cows. If you have a coyote problem in your cows, there's probably a herd management problem. There's some health issues. There's something that's drawing those coyotes to your cows. That's not always the case. Sometimes you just have coyotes that pack up and start preying on calves. Sheep guys especially will have different issues than cattle guys. But the number one problem with trying to run greyhounds would be farm ground. And the bigger farm country, and especially nowadays with a lot of this farm ground, guys just really don't want people driving on their farm ground. It's gotten more and more popular in these Midwest states to plant winter wheat, which they plant in the fall and it grows off and on throughout the winter. Generally, you're not going to hurt winter wheat driving over it when it's frozen out there. But farmers are notoriously persnickety about having people driving across their farm fields. I mean, they've got 1,000 country songs about guys driving through farm fields. So farmers can get a little funny about people driving through their farm fields. So that's that. And generally speaking, big wheat farmers and hay guys aren't running cows, so they don't really care about the coyotes. It's not their problem.
So when you're out scouting, Kel, looking for a new spot, I guess what kind of cover or what kind of layout are you looking for?
Are we talking decoy dogs or sight hounds?
The sight hounds.
Sight hounds, I'm looking, first of all, for access. I've got to be able to get there. I'm kind of limited on how far I can send the dogs. You know, I've had dogs that I've sent a long, long ways. If they can see a coyote, there's guys that'll turn them out. A lot of these western states, places I've been, just because you can see a coyote across the canyon and your dogs can see the coyote, it doesn't work out to send your dogs. I mean, that's a long ways over there. But I'm looking for access. I'm looking for, like, fence rows. A lot of these coyotes will lay up during the daytime on fence rows. You know, old fence rows that have tall grass. Shelter belts are really, really a good one. They're kind of hard to hunt because out here they're cedar trees. And cedar trees are like a brick wall. I mean, and you know there's coyotes in there, but if you drive on one side, guarantee you the coyote splits out the other side. And by the time you get to it, get around the shelter belt, he's gone. So I'm generally looking for country that has a little bit of cover for coyotes, but some open country that I can see and that I can work to my advantage with the dogs. What you're trying to do, or what I'm trying to do, is get these coyotes picked up out of cover and pushed out onto open ground that the dogs can see and can run.
I recently have come across this catch dog thing and really have become infatuated with it. I can't follow enough pages and watch enough of it. So to me, on the outside, in a southeastern state, appears to me that the sport is gaining popularity. Do you feel like in the at least 7 or 8 years you've been in the coyote side, not so much the herding dog side, but, you know, in your 7 or 8 years of coyote chasing and decoy dogging, do you think the sport is catching any fire or gaining any popularity? Do you think it's going away? What direction do you see your sport going in?
The decoy dogging is absolutely exploding. Absolutely exploding. There's a couple of famous coyote caller internet personalities that really got, they kind of got into the decoy dogging, and there's multiple Facebook pages on decoy dogging, and there's a bunch of guys out there doing it. You know, and the cool thing about decoy dogging is it doesn't necessarily take a special breed of dog. If you got a dog that can handle a little bit of gunfire, has a little bit of grit, and you can call him back, you know, and a healthy hatred for coyotes doesn't hurt, you can go out and decoy coyotes. And so guys are doing it, and I think it's awesome. I mean, anything you can get to do with a dog is, you know, is super, super cool. But no, decoy dogging is absolutely exploding. And I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome. It you know, there's a lot of dogs, and anybody that's listening to this that thinks they need to go out and get a hide terrier, or they need to get a black mouth cur, or they need to go get a specific breed of dog to go out and decoy coyotes, you absolutely don't. You need a dog that, like I said, it's got a little bit of grit. He's got a recall. You can get him over gunshots. You know, that opens it up. There's a lot of dogs sitting in the pound that check all those boxes that need a home. And so you don't have to go out, you know, and I hate to kind of shoot my breeder friends in the foot, but man, there's a lot of dogs out there that could really use a home that would be fantastic decoy dogs. So, and anybody can do it. You know, it doesn't take, you don't have to have a pack of dogs to go out and decoy coyotes. One or two is more than enough. And so it's a pretty low entry sport. I mean, you can go out there with a dog and have a good time. As far as greyhounds go, that's hard to tell. It certainly has gone down a lot over the years. There used to be a lot more greyhounds running around, a lot more greyhound guys. Access has gotten to be an issue. Fences are an issue. There's a lot more fences than there ever used to be. And it's expensive. It's expensive. You've got to have a pickup. You've got to have a box. And say the pickup is paid for and the box is paid for and the dogs are paid for, you've still got a pile of money in dog food, because I promise you a 96-pound staghound eats a lot of dog food.
You're feeding a pack. And, yeah, you're not feeding, you know, us tree dogs. Like, yeah. Well, Chad's got more than I do, but I'm a one-dog man, and it's, you know, she's almost a year old, and she's about a 15-pound dog, so she's not eating a whole lot.
No. And, you know, but the other major thing about hunting, you know, coyote hounds with a pickup, and that's the other thing, decoy dogging, you don't have to have a special pickup. You don't even have to have a dog box. You can, you know, a lot of guys running around with their dogs in the front seat. My dogs would go through the windshield the first time they saw a coyote run across the road in front of me, so they ride in a box. But, you know, when you're running greyhounds, you know, it's not if you tear up a pickup, and it's when. And it's front end, it's suspension, it's engine mounts, it's shocks, it's drive lines, it's transmissions, and God knows every place them all.
I remember, so, me and you talking about that picture you put up where you had reattached your control arm with a dog collar just to get it out of the field.
Yeah, I didn't have to go very far. I had to get it off of a road. I was in a right-of-way. And, yeah, I carry a few extra collars, and, yeah, it's a weird deal. I was out coyote hunting, and it feels stupid because I was out coyote hunting and driving around and nothing. Everything was fine. And I crossed a cattle guard. And when I crossed the cattle guard, my upper control arm said no more. So there we went. But yeah, it's expensive. That's part of the drawback to running staghounds. And they're a big commitment. There's guys that have tried and running one or two staghounds, and that's tricky, and that's a whole nother conversation. But
Well, you know, and I meant to preface the episode a little bit, just kind of, and I guess it's not a preface anymore because we're around in third base here, but I feel like there's a, y'all almost fall in the same category as the trappers, you know, as, I guess I'll just say it because I think anyone listening is probably going to agree with us. If they're listening this far in, they agree with us. So as soft as society is getting, you know, I feel like there's a lot of stigma around trappers and, you know, catch dogs from the little bit that I've just been seeing and getting into. It seems really popular with the lurchers over in, you know, England, or Europe, I guess I should say. But I would think the stigma kind of around having a hound run down a dog, catch a dog, fight a dog, kill a dog, would probably not be detrimental, but not be helpful to your sport as we as a culture get softer.
Yes. So there's two sides to that. And I catch a fair bit of flack from other coyote hound guys. You know, people don't know anything about this. They don't need to know about it. Don't show them, you know. And but you and I talked about it before. I feel like if there's only one side getting attention and being represented, we see that all the time in society. If only one side is speaking up and saying something, that's the side that gets what they want. And I feel like I was conflicted whenever I decided to start sharing stuff on social media, because it isn't necessarily pretty, you know, to see something die. It's not pleasant. I don't enjoy watching coyotes die. I don't enjoy watching coons die. But I enjoy the dogs doing what the dogs naturally want to do and hunting. And I'm also thinning down predator numbers while I'm at it, especially with the fur markets as terrible as they are. But there's got to be some representation, and I'm trying to give information so that people understand. I get comments about, well, if your dog's tough, then put one on one and let's see, you know, that's not fair. That's, you know, that's dog fighting. That's baiting. One dog, one coyote. They used to do that similar for centuries, and some countries still do that. And I'm not in that. One of the reasons I run the numbers of dogs that I do with coyotes, especially on the sight hounds, is to kill that coyote as quickly and humanely as possible. I'm not into trying to see how hard it is and watch a fight, a grand battle. I'm not into that at all. As a matter of fact, if a coyote is alive for more than about 10 or 15 seconds after my dog's getting, I feel like I've failed. I feel like I need to work on my dynamic and get something stronger, because that's not my goal, is to watch a fight. I don't enjoy that at all. So, and I think that's where a lot of people get bad ideas of what it is that it's some sort of an epic battle for life. And that's not what it is. And it should be noted, though, that most coyotes and raccoons that get caught by dogs die far more humanely and quickly than almost any animal that they catch and eat. While that doesn't give us an open license to be cruel, nature is not this Disney movie that people want it to be. That nature is brutal. Things don't die in nature like a Disney movie. And I think that it's certainly our obligation as hunters to end a life, if we decide to take it, as quickly and humanely as possible. And that's one reason why I run as many dogs as I do.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit on that point too, because that's one thing that I kind of picked up and gathered just through, you know, looking at your content and kind of watching some of these catch dogs, and as I've become infatuated with them, is it happens so much quicker than you expect. And I don't think, you know, when I just talk to non-dog hunting people, whether it's squirrel hunting or coyote chasing, you know, they kind of look at you like, man, how terrible. But, you know, you really don't, unless you really get into it and spend the time to research and talk to people, you don't realize on face value that these coyotes, when you catch them, it's over pretty fast, you know. to your point, you know, I'm glad that you said the 10 to 15 second thing. That's what I meant to preface this with in the beginning, was that we're not going to spend this whole episode talking about some, you know, awful, terrible, gruesome dogfight. That it's a hunt and it's a kill, just like shooting them with a gun, and maybe even faster.
Yeah, and the other added benefit of hunting with dogs is coyotes don't get up and walk away from dogs with a missing leg or with, you know, their bottom jaw blown off. I've hunted coyotes a long time, and I've seen every manner of terrible injury that coyotes have gotten. And I know no shade on any of the other trapping or hunting. Accidents happen, mistakes happen, and it's every ethical hunter feels terrible about putting a bad shot on an animal, or a trapper feels terrible if he has a coyote get, you know, into a wreck with a trap and get away crippled. That it's a terrible thing, but whenever dogs catch a coyote, they don't get up. They don't walk away. They don't run away with a broken leg or blown off leg. It doesn't happen. They're dead. Or they get away scot-free, a little bit wiser. So there's no in between. They don't get caught and get mangled and then get away.
Right.
And yeah. But I mean, it's, you know, that's one thing that I do like about it is when these dogs get a hold, it's over. It's done. Like I said, I've made bad shots myself. And if it hadn't been for, and that's one reason why I've committed myself, not only because of the love of dogs, but that's the other reason why I've committed myself to bringing a dog on a coyote stand. I had a triple come in this last weekend. So three coyotes came in on Bonnie last weekend. They were pretty shy. And I could have shot one or two of them, but they didn't really want to work the dog, and it was about dog work for me. But one of the reasons I've committed to bringing a dog on coyote stands, and it's not just shooting every single coyote with a decoy dogging, is because if I make a bad shot, I can guarantee I'm going to catch up with that coyote, and it's not going to suffer. And to me, that's important. Like, yeah. I say, I might hunt things, but I'm not a brute. I'm not a barbarian. I don't enjoy watching things suffer and die. I absolutely respect coyotes. They're an incredible animal. They're very resilient. They're wicked smart. You know, and part of the reason I got into hunting coyotes was because I was in Montana, I think, whenever I really started getting deep into it, and deer were just everywhere, and everybody was about deer hunting, and I'm like, man, I could go out here and I could shoot like 200 deer a night if I wanted to, or I could maybe go out and shoot one or two coyotes. And they were just so much more challenging and intelligent, and they're cool. They're a cool animal, but like any other predator out there, they need to be managed. And so that's kind of my thing is dog work and managing predators.
Well, one thing that we've asked several guests just on the tree dog side of things that we're typically talking about, but you hit on, you know, confirmation and how important, you know, personality traits and structure of a dog are to you when you're selecting a pup personally. Do you feel that your greyhounds or even Bonnie being a hide terrier, do you feel like there's breeding for those dogs that the breeds are improving? Because I know, like with your greyhounds, they cross them over, you know, several different kinds of breeds. It's not going to be straight greyhound. They, you know, you mix something else in there to get this trait or that trait. Is the breeding fine-tuned enough that these breeds are improving to help you in your sport?
100%. 100%. Staghounds, sighthounds for coyote hounds are light years from what they – there's actually some old guys that were early in the days of it, and they were getting dogs off the track, straight greyhounds, and they just take them out and run with them and try to see what they had. And those dogs generally would run fast, but they wouldn't necessarily fight. They just had no idea what they were supposed to do if they ever caught anything. No, I 100% believe that the availability, the internet, the phones, you know, the ease of travel has done nothing but absolutely improve sighthounds by and large. You're able to get access to more people and better dogs. It's just a lot easier. So that has certainly gotten better. On the like we said on the decoy dog thing, there's not a lot of criteria that need to be met to be a decoy dog. So you can kind of make that happen with anything. But as far as the sighthounds, they've certainly got to be, they're purpose built, and they have absolutely, in my opinion, improved over the years just from, I'm not a 90-year-old man talking to you, so I wasn't around back then. But sure, from everything I've understood from the old-timers, these dogs are just light years ahead of what they used to be.
Well, and you just mentioned, too, getting a dog from the track, and you're referring to, you know, greyhound racetracks. And you mentioned hot blood earlier, and those kind of go hand-in-hand, right? You told me that a hot blood dog is one that's coming from the track. That's what they call hot bloods.
So hot bloods are generally... My understanding of it is hot bloods are race bred greyhounds. So they came out of, generally speaking, a greyhound racing kennel or off the track. Yes, they were hot blood is a greyhound that was bred specifically to run on the track.
So that you're getting the hot blood for the speed, and then you're crossing it into a more of a hunting style or a bite catch type dog to put the speed with the catch.
Yeah, so most of your deer hounds, wolf hounds, they're just heavy. They're just too heavy. I'm not going to say some of them aren't fast, but they're big, big dogs. They're heavy, and they're just not slow enough. They can't turn fast enough. They're just not enough there. But when you combine the greyhound with the wolf hound stat, deer hound stuff, you get the speed, some size and power, certainly some intelligence. Greyhounds, straight hot blood greyhounds, in my opinion, aren't necessarily the smartest dog in the world. So you get a little bit more intelligence whenever you cross them in there. Some other guys are crossing in. There's some guys running some Airedale in there. I'm not entirely certain why. I don't necessarily know what the Airedale brings to the breed or brings to the equation, that maybe a little power and stamina. And there's a lot of guys running some Saluki. Salukis certainly bring in a lot of stamina, heat tolerance. So overheating on these dogs is very, very, it's a big risk. And so you've got to be very careful on times of the year that you run these dogs. And so it's primarily a winter sport because overheating is a very big risk. These dogs will run till they die if you let them, and it's just in them. That's what they want to do. So they don't care whether it's 90 degrees or it's 14 degrees. If you turn out on a coyote, they're going to run. So generally there's kind of a cutoff in that. I don't know. I don't like to get above 50. I know some guys down in Texas are running some heavily bred Saluki dogs, and they're running up there's, 60 degrees. So, they're kind of bred for their part of the world too. That's certainly a thing. Those southern bred dogs are, got a little bit more Saluki in them, a little more greyhound. Maybe they can handle a little bit more heat than like these. They call them like a heavy cold-blooded stag. These heavy dogs that we run up north, these dogs that got a little bit more wolfhound or deerhound in them, they maybe handle the cold a little bit better, but it cuts them off sooner in the spring whenever things start to heat up.
So to bring you back around to a world that we might understand slightly better, I made a note because you mentioned earlier that you hunt coon with Bonnie, which is a hide terrier, and I know nothing about that breed. So when she gets in there on a coon, is this terrier dog treeing? What's her coon behavior?
No, so generally we work brush piles or den holes. Coons, as you know, will go in anything, and they'll just kind of hang out anywhere. We get into a brush pile. We turn dogs into a brush pile, and if there's a coon in there, it's pretty quick. They just go in there and they engage the coon immediately. And the goal there is to get into the dogs and down to the coon as fast as you can. That's my goal. Dogs don't have a lot of power in a brush pile. The coon has all the power. First of all, the coon knows all the little holes. Secondly, a coon is a lot more suited with their hands and stuff to crawl around and get around, and they can work a dog over in a brush pile. They just have all the advantage. So my goal is to get in there as fast as I can and open it up so the dogs can finish that or get in there. And I used a knife to go ahead and dispatch coons.
Wow.
the last couple of years, I've gotten to where I use a knife or a spear. I was in a brush pile with some, with a great big coon one time, and I was like, man, I'm going to get bit. I'm reaching in this brush pile trying to stick this coon with a little dagger that I carry, and I'm like, man, if only I had a knife that had a longer handle on it so I could reach in there and get him, but I didn't get bit. And I was racking my brain trying to think of how to make this thing, and I was like, dude, they had this for like 1,000 years. They call it a spear. So I got to where I pack around a little spear when I work brush piles, which then naturally progressed into me deer hunting with a spear. And wow. I was lucky. I was in Nebraska and I actually took a deer with a spear last year. So, but I don't know where we were there. I got onto the deer with a spear.
Just the high terrier behavior or reaction on a coon.
Yeah, they're going to engage, or they should engage. They absolutely should engage. I don't want a dog that'll bay at a coon. That's not my in a brush pile, it doesn't do me any good. And generally speaking, in a brush pile, if your dog starts engaging a coon and they can't get a solid lock on a coon, that coon will leave the brush pile and they'll go in tree, and then you can go ahead and dispatch them with a rifle out of a tree. Or, you know, I generally run around with some other dogs. It depends on what I want to do. It's kind of considered bad form in the greyhound world to let greyhounds fight coons because they start developing some bad habits that guys don't want. But I'm kind of a oddball weirdo. So a lot of times when I go to work a brush pile, I'll run terriers in the brush pile and I'll have a couple of staghounds on the outside in the event that a coon splits out of the pile.
That's
staghounds will catch them pretty quick.
So I think it's just about the time of the podcast that I really enjoy.
Oh,
we kind of give you a fair warning earlier. what kind of good story you got for us?
I was thinking about this a lot, and I couldn't come up with a super funny story, but I did have a really, really cool story that happened to me several years ago in Wyoming whenever I first kind of got into the decoy dogging. I had a border collie that was hard on coyotes. I mean, just absolutely smash a coyote, but he didn't like guns. He didn't even like the sight of a gun. But I thought, well, I'll take him coyote hunting with me. Maybe he'll see a coyote and he won't care about the gun and we'll get to decoy a coyote. So I drove out, got into a rock pile and did a couple of howls. And then I started going into some rabbit distress. And I was about 5 minutes into it, and that border collie was curled up in a ball behind me because I was holding a gun. And here comes a mountain lion, walked right in about 120 yards away. And so I called in a mountain lion on a coyote stand with a not a decoy dog, but kind of what I wanted to be a decoy dog at the time. And was able to take a mountain lion on a coyote stand. And that was by far one of the coolest hunting stories I've got, I guess. Certainly very unexpected. I did not anticipate that. So
did the dog decoy the mountain lion like it would a coyote?
Oh, no, he didn't. He just, matter of fact, after I shot the lion, I had a lion tag and was able to go ahead and take the lion. I went down there and there was a little bit of a tracking, and it ended up being a little bit of a sketchy situation. I ended up in the brush with a lion and then a rock pile with a lion, and was finally able to catch up to her and finish, go ahead and dispatch her that way. But it was a little bit sketchy for a minute. I ended up way close to that lion in the brush pile, probably within 5 feet of her. I watched her skirt around me in the brush and then she ran out on a cow trail. But no, that dog, especially after that gun went off, that dog never left. That he was laying back there behind my little pad that I sit on the ground. He was laying back there, and he never even moved. He didn't want any part of whatever.
He decided I didn't like that. I'm at it. Yeah.
No, he didn't do that. But he was super hard on coyotes. You know, matter of fact, that dog, I was out fixing fence one day, and we came across a three-legged coyote out in a meadow. I was riding horseback and we came across a three-legged coyote, and that Willie dog, he was a border collie, caught he denture caught and got him down. It was hot. He got that coyote caught and had him on the ground, and I had to call for some backup and got some more dogs out there to him. But, he hated coyotes, and I don't know why. I don't know that a coyote ever did anything to Willie, but he just woke up and chose violence against coyotes every day.
So something else I'll just ask you, and maybe there's a story comes out of it. You did mention earlier that, you know, your dad was a veterinarian and that he's not necessarily completely understanding to your hunting lifestyle. What is his reaction to your hobby as a veterinarian and, you know, caring for animals all those years?
Well, he doesn't. It's mostly, I guess, my mother. My dad thinks there might be better ways to do it. And I should say this, though. My dad doesn't really like hunting coyotes. He believes they do a lot of good. And I'm inclined to agree with him in a large part. Coyotes do a lot of good. They kill a lot of mice. They eat a lot of grasshoppers. They get rid of dead animals so that we don't have flies flying around spreading disease and so forth. And coyotes are a very integral part of a healthy ecosystem. I feel like that's something that I should have said earlier is coyotes are a very important part of the ecosystem, and I do not want to see coyotes eliminated, and I have no animosity towards them. But so my dad doesn't hunt coyotes, never has. He said he shot one 50 years ago. So my dad is 92 years old.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah. He's good genetics. So he shot a coyote probably 50 years ago. It was out in some cows. And so he went out, he was curious, young veterinarian. And he went out and he opened this coyote up, and he was absolutely full of grasshoppers and afterbirth. And my dad said from that day forward, I know he shot one coyote when I was a kid that came to the fence and was trying to fight our dogs through the fence. But other than that, I don't think my dad's ever shot another coyote. But he understands that you have to manage these predators. And the fur market just isn't there. And so there's nobody – the days of long trap lines and guys out there catching, you know, 250 coyotes a year, those days are – gone, at least for the foreseeable future. So there's got to be somebody that's maintaining predator numbers, and my dad understands that. My mother thinks that Beauty and the Beast was a terrible movie, violent movie. So my mother is from Jackson, Mississippi. She is a Southern lady through and through and pretty soft-hearted. So she just thinks that it's just terrible. But
I just thought maybe coming from a veterinarian standpoint, your dad just thought, you know, putting the dogs in that situation, you're just asking for a vet bill.
No, and that's another thing that I think a guy needs to understand before they get into hunting dogs, especially I was trying to figure out how to say this before the podcast, but dogs that hunt through force, I guess, you know, your dogs are treeing dogs and so forth, and they have their share of vet bills. But there's a big difference between a dog that goes and trees a squirrel and a dog that goes head to head with a coyote or a big old 30-pound boar coon.
Oh, absolutely.
So there's damage that happens, and these dogs, there's no forcing these dogs. They love it. And I was telling you on the phone before, you get a greyhound, they'll get bit by a coyote, and they're sensitive dogs, and they scream, and, you know, it's – oh boy, you'd think they'd quit. No way, man. The very next coyote they see 5 minutes later, they're screaming their heads off. They want a piece of him. They love it. They just love it. But before somebody gets involved with dogs that go head to head with predators, I think they should have a basic understanding of veterinary medicine. And I'm not saying that a person should be a vet, and by all means, seek veterinary attention if you don't know what you're doing or you can't handle it. But also keep that in mind. You don't want to be 200 miles from the nearest veterinarian and have no idea how to get to the vet or, you know, if you're going to go out and do something like that. The chances of damage is very slim, but it would be terrible to watch your friend die because you didn't prepare yourself to handle a situation. Things happen. There's veins in dogs, and you know, dogs overheat, whether it's a decoy dog or whether it's a coyote hound. That kind of stuff can happen, and people should have a basic understanding of how to stop bleeding, how to treat overheating in dogs, how to deal with porcupine quills, which is a very real thing out west. You know, snake bite, how to handle snake bite in dogs. Those are things that people need to be versed in before they ever, some basic veterinary medicine before they start getting into this kind of game. I'd hate to see somebody say, well, he said I could go get a dog from the pound and go out here and fight coons,
right.
You know, and have a wreck like that. You've got to have a good first aid kit. You've got to have a good understanding of how to use it, but don't be afraid to use a vet. And that's something people need to financially prepare for, you know, anymore. If I go to a vet with a dog, it's $1,000. I can almost guarantee it. So have $1,000 that is there if something happens, and chances are it'll never happen. And sure, people need to understand that you've got to be prepared.
Yeah, they are huge investments. I mean, you might as well be ready to protect them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's fair. You know, you and I talked about that before on the phone. Every time the door drops, every time I turn these dogs out, I ask them for their life. And that's cliche, I suppose. But these dogs are going to battle, and they want to do it. It's not a forced thing. I'm not dropping them in an arena. They want to do it. But every time I turn these dogs out, I'm asking them for their life. And there's a saying, and as a matter of fact, it came from a guy over in Europe. He said, hunt them like soldiers, treat them like kings. And I 100% believe that. I do everything I can to try to give these dogs the best care I can and the best quality of life I can. Because just like Trixie, one day that door might drop and that might be it. They may never come back. And that's a hard, hard thing. But the price of a good dog is a broken heart in the end. And that is 100% true.
Well, Bill, this is all good stuff. This was as good as I knew it was going to be.
I'm glad you're happy.
Did we miss anything? You know, is there any questions, comments, or cheap shots or anything you wanted to hit on that we didn't ask?
No, I feel like, you know, we touched on kind of the important stuff. I like I said, my big thing is care, you know, making sure people take care of these animals the best to their ability, and trying to do things when harvesting wild animals as humanely as possible. And there's people that'll certainly say that harvesting animals with another animal is archaic and inhumane.
Yeah, but they're not
quite
listening.
Frankly. Well, they're not listening. And, you know, whenever you jump into a brush pile and you get four or five coons with dogs, you're not going to get those four or five coons any other way out of that big, great big brush pile.
Right.
You know, I'm talking tree slash pile stuff. It's not going to happen. And these animals need to be managed. But again, like I said, before anybody starts getting involved in the hunting with dog things, just do your research, figure out exactly what you need. It's a commitment. It's a big commitment. So this isn't listen to the podcast, man, that sounds cool, go out, get a dog, let's go hunting. It's a big commitment. About any other hobby in the world would be cheaper and yeah, keep you more sane than running dogs. But there's something super cool about watching dogs. You know, at least for me, it's just, I just love watching dogs hunt. So that's where I'm at.
Well, all right. Well, I can encourage everybody to go check him out on Instagram. Do you have a Facebook page? I don't remember if I found you on there or not. Or do you focus your content on Instagram? So it's underscore K9PWR underscore, and Bill does an excellent job with his content. I mean, you know, my opinion, your picture quality, the reels you put up and all that, they're all worth watching. So definitely go check him out. I always try to encourage people that it doesn't matter if you're treeing a squirrel, a coon, baying a cat, chasing a bear, or catching coyotes. You know, we all got to support each other and learn something different, which is one reason that, you know, I was kind of drawn to getting you on the podcast and just kind of hearing about different experiences rather than the squirrel dogs that we all know already. You know, something different and definitely interesting. So definitely go give him a follow. And Bill, we appreciate you coming on, appreciate your time, We've kept you on the phone for about an hour and a half now, so appreciate your patience on that. And look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, it's been a real honor, man. I really appreciate you having me on and being able to represent my little piece of the dog hunting world. So it's been awesome, man. I really look forward to it, and I appreciate everything you're doing.
Now I gotta get Gavin talked in, because I'll supply the pup. He's got to train the decoy dog.
I don't know. I'll have to get.
He sounds like he had a decoy dog and he burned his ears off.
Yeah, you're right. On that that encounter alone, he might have shown signs of being a decoy dog. It might have worked.
Well, that's big for me, so I can supply another pup. He can train a decoy dog.
I'll have to get with Bill and do more research on how to get that going. But, it sounds super cool. I would love to see it happen. Well, again, we appreciate it. And, like I said, look forward to talking to you again, and definitely going to keep following you on Instagram.
Cool. Thank you. Likewise.
All right. Thanks, Bill. We'll see you.